You're on 98.7 Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone. We're heading for a top of 16 degrees with some showers. Happy Halloween to everybody.
Yeah.
If you're into it.
That's right. And if not, you can put the sign on the door.
Yep, do not disturb. Do not ring the bell.
No.
I actually put a funny post up on my Facebook today around that, you know, people giving out treats that are better for gut health than lollies.
Yeah. Here's some probiotics when
That's
you come
right,
in.
Exactly.
I don't think the kids will be as excited about that.
No, they would not.
It's just not going to be as fun.
Exactly.
So how was your weekend?
Yeah, really good. Went to Queensland and actually went to Queensland for a wedding, but the wedding was in New South Wales. So then went across the border to New South Wales for the actual wedding. But it was lovely up there, nice and warm. I actually had to have the heated seats on this morning driving here. Wow. Just ridiculous. It's just so cold at the moment.
I know. And the other day, it was Sunday, it was just so hot. Like, we weren't ready for it.
Yeah. So how was your weekend?
Yeah, it was really, really good, actually. But it was great having Sue Barron on last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
And I obviously, as I mentioned, I actually got my results and Emily's results from the Smart DNA, the, you know, genetic disposition. And geez, it teaches you a lot about yourself.
I know. It's a great insight.
Fascinating. Mm. And from a kinesiology point of view, you know, I obviously work a lot with the emotional side of things. Mm. But a lot of my clients really struggle as sensitives to absorb vitamin B.
Yeah.
And what she's sort of giving you is a little bit of an opportunity, I guess, to take this glutathione. Isn't
glutathione,
that right?
Yeah.
That's right. You know, and I've been taking that for the last three or four days.
Yeah.
And you can definitely tell the difference.
Yeah, you can feel the difference, can't you?
Yeah. And the fact is that if you take that, then you take your vitamin B.
No more brain fog.
It. Yeah. You're going to absorb your beds better, aren't you? So you're going to be thinking better.
Yeah.
Which means you can problem solve.
That's right. Exactly. Multitask the whole bit.
So for sensitives out there, it's definitely worthwhile. Mm. You know, the other part that came up in it is, you know, the difficulty with seasonal change within my genetics. Mm. So that's why everyone else can go cycling. And, you know, in winter, and they're absolutely fine. Mm. And I'm freezing cold because my body doesn't adapt as quickly.
Wow.
So that's why I have to put newspaper, you know.
What do you mean newspaper?
Well, you put newspaper down the front of your jacket and that stops you from getting cold. It's the only thing that works.
Never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, it's much.
I just would go out on the bike.
Yeah, that's right. Sit by the fire.
You meant to read the newspaper, not stuff it down your top.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's just the difference, hey?
I know. Very strange.
But yeah, fascinating. Definitely worth doing. Yeah.
So, well, I'm glad you had a positive experience.
Yeah, get hold of Sue, you know, down in Beaumaris with Smart DNA.
Yeah, I know. Very exciting.
Now, today.
Yes, we have the gorgeous, talented lady called Karen Gately from Ryan Gately in the studio. How are you, Karen?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, you've got a bit of a song you want to start with, which is Better When I'm Dancing.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that.
Well, you know, really that just reflects, you know, one of the strategies that I have in life to maintain a positive mindset and to have energy in my life. And this song, just every time I hear it, I just agree, you know, I'm just more energized and happy and engaged when I'm having a bit of a dance, which I do in the office from time to time.
Let's have a dance in the studio.
Yeah, let's go.
Megan Trainor, you're on 98.7 Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone. We're heading for a top of 16 degrees with showers. And in the studio we have Karen Gately, director of Ryan Gately. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we're very fascinated about your story. And what was it like growing up in your early years in South Africa?
Well, yeah, I moved to Australia when I was 10, so they're very early memories, but I have very fond memories of my time there. You know, obviously it was a difficult country to be in, particularly at that time. And so my parents, you know, chose to bring us here for a safer life, really, on many levels. But, you know, have a great connection with Africa and all things African.
And have you always been a leader? Like, were you one of those little kids that was the boss and would lead people astray?
I don't know about astray. I was always actually quite a goody-goody in that regard.
You?
Yeah, I always wanted to do the right thing. But one story that my parents love to tell is going to my dad's work Christmas party, and Santa was there, and Santa had a present for my older brother. And my older brother was just not having any of this. He wasn't going to go up to see Santa. So apparently I just looked at him, thought this was quite odd, grabbed his hand, dragged him up to the front of the stage, collected the present, gave it to him. You know, and that was apparently at age four. So I'd have to say yes, probably.
Yes, I think so. I think you were born to lead.
Yeah. I just have always felt very comfortable being in front of people and have never really had a lot of challenge in stepping up and saying, okay, well, I'll give that a go. And I'm grateful for that aspect of my character.
And you got into karate very early.
Yeah. So my dad was training in karate and he had done boxing and judo and all sorts of other things prior to that. And for some reason, as a five-year-old girl, I decided that I really wanted to learn how to fight. And I know, I'm not really sure where that was coming from.
We were pretending to be Wonder Woman, but you're actually doing the real thing.
Yeah. Exactly. And no Barbies, just karate.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually quite girly girl at the same time. Are quite you? A contradiction. Yeah. You know, yeah. So
you had your Barbies and the karate.
Yeah. Wow. No, quite literally, I used to collect Care Bears and my bedroom was full of pink, fluffy toys. And then I'd go off and put my karate suit on and go and fight with people. So yeah, I started at age five. You know, I begged apparently to be able to go, and eventually my parents said yes, okay, let's do this. And then I ended up training and competing and teaching for, you know, 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gee.
It's a long time.
Yeah. So where did you compete? Was it, you know, sort of like all throughout different states or?
Yeah. So we were part of the Australian Karate Federation, which is an organisation that obviously represents a broad range of different styles and schools. And so I'd compete through that organisation, and we were competing in state, national and international competitions. So, yeah, I was fortunate to win many state national titles and also a gold medal at a world championships. So it was... yeah, it was a huge part of my life, being an athlete and a competitor, but as I said before, also a teacher and a coach. Mm.
Well, you're someone that I want to have with me if I was in a dark alley, that's all I can say. So you are a black belt.
I'm a third Dan black belt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. Right. I'm going to hang out with you.
Yeah. And what you'll find is the advice I'll give you is let's get out of here. You know? the best way to win a fight is to not be there. Yeah. That's a simple reality. You know, it teaches us a lot about awareness and recognizing the dangers around us and choosing to make smart choices about extracting ourselves from difficult situations.
Yeah, because I was just about to ask you that question. I mean, what's the biggest thing you got out of the karate experience?
I think really, if I had to sum it down to one thing, it's actually the ability to hear your own thoughts and to consciously choose better ones. You know, in the martial arts, you know, you need to learn how to kick and punch and do all of those things to obviously defend yourself. But the reality is that skill adds no value if you don't choose to use it in the moment. So, you know, when your life is under threat, you need to have the presence of mind, you need to have the courage to choose to fight for your life. And so understanding what fears are going through my mind, how am I feeling right now, what does that mean for how I then behave or how I'm responding, is a huge part of that martial arts journey. So, you know, it doesn't mean you always have control over those thoughts and emotions, but you at least have a starting point where you can see them and you know you need to make a choice.
Yeah. So you can certainly take those skills into what you're doing now, really.
Absolutely.
It's transferable.
It's entirely transferable. Yeah. And that's, you know, what I've discovered very early in my work life is that everything I'd learnt in the world of karate was directly relevant.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Geez, your dad must have been very proud of you.
Yeah, he's proud of me.
Yeah.
Anyone who knows my dad will giggle at hearing you say, yes, my dad's very proud of me. He's very proud of all of his kids, clearly.
Yeah. How many kids?
There's three. Sounded
like a big group.
That's right, a whole karate school.
I do need to acknowledge a few others. I also have a beautiful stepbrother and sister as well. Okay. So in total, there's five of us.
Right. Wow.
And he is. He's very, very proud of all of us. But obviously, being my sensei, which is your karate teacher, he had a huge role to play in my life and in those training years especially.
Can you imagine what rough and tumble would be like in, you know, in your home in your childhood?
Yeah.
There'd be no push and shove. It'd be like, right, it's on.
It was actually a great part of growing up, I've got to tell you. I don't know if you guys remember the Pink Panther movies.
Yes, I used to love them.
Well, that was my life. You know, so I'd be walking down the corridor and my brother was on an absolute mission to make sure that no one could hurt me, right? So he would just suddenly turn into, what was the guy, Kato, was that his name? He'd suddenly just turn into him and like attack me when I wasn't expecting it, you know. And I'd be wrestling around on the floor and with my brother. And obviously it was a hell of a lot of fun. But we used to do things like have ice cream fights. And every now and again, Mum, who didn't train, you know, she would get the wooden spoon out and see if she could sort out these black belts. It's a bit of a challenge for her, especially if Dad was involved.
She needed to get the nunchuckers out.
That's right, exactly.
Did you learn nunchuckers as well? Because that was huge here in Beaumaris.
Oh, yeah. It was huge.
I remember my brothers practicing on me.
Oh, okay. Right. Nice. Well, hopefully they had the rubber ones.
Yeah, that's right.
Look, we didn't do – we did some weapons training in our school. Many of the students that I was training with, though, would you know, do that in their own time and really try and master it and give us endless entertainment by knocking themselves out in the back of the head, by whacking themselves with it. Right. You know? So it was – you know, there were a group of the young men, if you like, really, if I had to put it into one group, who were right into the weapons stuff, but I didn't like the nunchucker because I kept hitting myself with them.
That's right.
Well, our family weapon of choice was getting the tea towel and swirling it around and then just flicking it.
Oh,
you know, when you're doing the dishes, when you're made to wash or dry.
And it was just, when you got it right, though, it was just like that beautiful swinging golf, wasn't it? Just nailed it.
Yeah.
Jeez, it hurt.
I know, exactly.
All right. So we have another song here and it's called The Greatest by Sia.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it just really reminds me of the power that we have to choose. You know, what reality in life do we want to create and why not us? You know, I think a lot of people start off when they reflect on certain things they want to achieve. There's this self-doubt. There's this internal voice that says, you know, I can't because I'm not enough to do whatever it might be. And I just love the message in the song around why not be the greatest?
Yeah.
You can be that if that's what you want to be.
Cool. The Greatest. Sia, you're on 98.7 FM. Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone. Heading for a top of 16 degrees with showers. And in the studio we have Karen Gately. Welcome again.
Thank you.
Karen, so we're starting to get to know your story, South Africa. I travelled all the way through Africa, and so I can appreciate the beautiful place that you grew up in.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and you're a dad, obviously a karate teacher.
Yeah.
And so there was, you know, no chance for you not to be very good at karate.
Well, that's right.
You know, just to survive. Yeah, rough and tumble. You had to be pretty quick.
That's right.
And you did so well. I mean, you know, right up to black belt and obviously won national and international titles.
Like, yeah.
That's just huge. What age were you when you sort of got to that level?
I got my black belt when I was 14.
Well.
And at the time I was the youngest person to be awarded a adult level or full black belt in our style. So it was it was a really big moment. I was in the US and it was today on Halloween in the US.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Exactly. So, I was, you know, I was absolutely at that point in my life, obviously, you know, I'd had a lot of experience in the training part and I'd also had a lot of experience in the teaching part. And I think that that's what actually helped me to be given that award is that I'd been sharing my knowledge with other kids largely from a very young age.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you grew up?
I've always known what I wanted to be and it's always changed.
Really? Okay. So funny.
So, I've always had a very clear view. Okay, this is where I'm going. This is what I want to create. But the path has been a meandering one. So I started off doing a phys ed degree.
Yeah.
And at that point, had no idea that I would be running my own business and, inspiring and influencing other people to thrive at work and in life. But looking back, I can see very clearly how every single step
counted
has built toward this and the experience that I've been able to bring from those different stages of my life have been essential.
So you really brought, I guess, the karate modality into the corporate world. You suddenly found that passion for leadership, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So when I first went into the work world, you know, I was working in a call centre environment. I was a client service manager. There weren't many teaching jobs in those days, so becoming a phys ed teacher was challenging. So I'd gone into the business world with very little experience. And what I realised is I had this group of people that I needed to influence their success. And so just started to reflect on what would I do if I was a sensei? you know, if this was the dojo, how would I focus on these people and their development?
Mm.
And, you know, and fast forward many years now, you know, the martial arts is central to everything I teach. So my first book's The Corporate Dojo, which was what I learnt in the world of business, sorry, in the world of karate and how that relates in the world of business about building, you know, the strength of someone's spirit, their capacity to make courageous choices, and ultimately the capacity to thrive because they have both the talent, the energy, the behaviours that will allow them to be successful. So, you know, in all of my corporate experiences, if you like, I've learned more about how relevant those things are in the business world.
It's amazing, isn't it, that the foundation of that has really made you who you are today and just passionate about, you know, helping corporations find their own path in leadership, you know, and particularly HR. I mean, my background, I've done Bachelor of Business. It was 27 years ago. It was Bachelor of Business of Administration majoring in HR because there wasn't actually a course. But you've come from a whole different angle, which is what I love about you. So you did your master's in HR.
Yeah.
Yeah, so not instead of coming from bottom up, you've come from top down.
Yeah, so I did a master's in HR because I wanted to be a better people leader. So I was, you know, in that call centre job, had a really challenging outcome to achieve in that we had really poor service standards, great expectation, very visible organisation. And you know, I could see that at the heart of success was the people in the group. I needed to give them the technology. I needed to give them the information. I needed to give them the training.
The support,
I needed to... the support, the encouragement, the energy levels, all of those things. And at the time, my dad's best friend made this announcement over Christmas dinner. He said, you know what, you're born to be in HR. I didn't actually even know what it was.
No.
HR puff and stuff?
Yeah. It was one of my favourite expressions.
I love that show.
I went and researched, you know, what was it about and realised that, you know, so much of it was really interesting to me. So I did my master's degree, as I say, to become a better people leader. And my general manager at the time saw this in me. He moved to another organisation, which was the Vanguard Group, and invited me to join him in an HR role. And that's how I actually transitioned across into that world, into that profession.
Did you actually set up the HR department?
Yeah. So that was the Vanguard Group is a global organisation, massive business. I joined them in their infancy in Australia. So it was only, I think, about 20 people in the building when I walked in. And so I was very fortunate to have a blank piece of paper in terms of the Australian approach to HR, a US parent that was incredibly respectful and understood that not everything works the same all the way around the world.
That's fantastic because that is so true. Every environment is different.
Exactly. Yeah. So they were amazing. The managing director of HR for the group was my mentor for many years, and she guided my thinking. She didn't dictate it. And, you know, so I'm, again, very grateful to her.
Yeah, great teacher.
Yeah, just to really be able to trial things and try them and see what worked. And I had a managing director that had a great deal of belief in human beings and the importance of people in influencing commercial outcomes. So it was a perfect training ground for me, really. It was a challenging industry in the funds management world, you know, a very ambitious organisation with a big business plan and things that we had to achieve, but loads of the right attitude when it came to people.
Wow.
That's fantastic. And I've noticed here also that while you were there, you had three kids.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
So you would have been a busy woman.
Yeah. But there's something you need to know. for over 20 years, I've had a full-time stay-at-home husband.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, I've absolutely had three children and clearly, you know, been pregnant and working and taking maternity leave and all those things are challenging. But I had an incredibly supportive home environment, you know. So when my second child was born, my husband gave up work and, you know, that second child is now 20. So, you know, it's obviously a challenge to have a family and build
a
career.
What a great team.
But that's what it comes down to. Yeah. It is about being a team.
So you apply what your knowledge in the corporate world into your home life too. Yeah. It's all transferable again, isn't it?
Well, it is all about life. That's right. It's about life principles, whether it's at work or whether it's in our family lives. Yeah. Or
you make it
work. It doesn't matter where it is. The same principles of success apply.
Yeah.
And so that is something I'm particularly proud of in my marriage is that we do have a very strong partnership. We know the roles that we both play and critically we both respect the role that the other plays.
Yeah, that's so important, that respect.
Okay, so be honest with us though. Do you ever argue?
Oh, it's called communication.
Do you know with the strategies you
yeah, look, you apply I would on say I don't know that we argue as much as every now and again.
Do you go through the steps?
I have my yeah.
Haven't got to that step yet. No, no,
no. We're not there yet. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Yeah, it's probably me having my meltdown moments more than actually him arguing. He's not the arguing type.
He's a calming influence.
Yeah. He's incredibly calming. Mm. Incredibly. Yeah. I've got a quick funny story to share though. My daughter did turn to me recently and say, "Look, just for one moment, can you guys stop coaching me?"
Yeah. I could imagine. Yeah, yeah.
So my husband in recent years has actually completed a psychology degree.
Oh, so they got double whammy.
Yeah, so they got it coming from all directions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is so cool though.
But he's a beautiful muso as well.
He loves music, so he doesn't play professionally, but he's incredibly talented, can pick up guitar and play beautifully. And
nice would that be to come
does
home
Does he
to?
Serenade you or anything?
That's right.
Oh, pretend he does. Yeah.
Dinner
Let's
music?
Just, yeah, like, that's right. You know, do you wake up? You know, a cup of tea in the morning and
he's
you know,
coming in the guitar naked. Playing,
that's right. Just,
I can give you half the story. Okay. Oh. So he comes in at 5:30. Well, 5:30, depending on when my alarm goes off. But for many, many years, my husband has done exactly that. He's been the one to get out of bed, make the coffee, bring it to me while I wake up. And then probably the most extreme example was the day he decided I really needed a second one. And I got into the car and there was one sitting there waiting for me.
So he's even reading in my. Yeah, so we need to clone him, don't we?
Mine's gorgeous.
Most common question I get is, does he have a brother?
That's right, exactly. Well, you've manifested well.
Yeah. You know what? We'd love to have him on the show so we can just be a part of his energy.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. He'd be able to teach you lots of or share lots of great insights to what he's learned in his world. You know, we've often joked about writing a book paralleling what I've seen in the world of business and what he has seen in raising the children. You know, obviously, we've both raised the kids, but he has absolutely had three different humans to influence and they've taken very different approaches to get the best from each of them.
And the thing is, it's not the value that is put on parents staying at home anymore looking after kids. It's such an important role.
It's essential.
And it's devalued.
Absolutely. Mm. And look, and I am the first to admit he's a much better stay-home parent than I would ever have been. My children are absolutely better off with him being the one that's there.
And why is that?
Because he has the patience.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously I like to believe with age and maturity I would have got better at it. I think I'd be a fantastic stay-home grandmother.
You'll be
grandmother.
A grandmother. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You'll be a good grandmother.
Yeah, I'll be ready for that, right? Because I'll be a bit more patient.
You've done everything.
Get more time.
Ticked off all the boxes. Yeah.
Yep. Not sprinting down off, you know, trying to make something
changing
happen.
The world every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also, so it's that, you know, I've obviously had all these big plans and dreams that I've wanted to create. But brutally honest, the stay-home parent job is way harder.
It's so much harder.
So much harder.
Yeah.
And I just think it drives me crazy, you know, when we don't, as a society, fully recognise that. I can't think of anything more important than raising the next generation and ensuring that our children have obviously the talents but also the character and the values and the behaviours that will allow them to thrive.
The tools.
Yeah. And they say it takes a community, really, to raise children.
It does.
But we've got this pressure just on, you know, the mum and the dad. The teachers and
The school system.
Yeah,
They need to sort it all out. But you've got three beautiful kids, and you were saying that they're actually. So are they more like you, or are they more like the dad?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, right? Yeah. So, and like all children.
And what day?
Yeah, like all children. You know, I can see aspects of both of us in them. Mm. You know, if I start with my youngest, she's very much a blend of her dad and I. She's very calm. She's very centered. She's, she's a really capable girl in terms of her intelligence. Mm. And she's driven, you know. So dad's calm and smart and I'm like, passionately wanting to create everything. And so I see her, Tamsin, as a participant in life. You know, she's always willing to give it a go. Mm-hmm. The second one I'd say has got a bigger dose of my gene. He's our nutty professor. He's studying to be an astrophysicist.
As you do.
He's doing physics. So he's a really bright boy. But he's, he's a big personality. Mm. He's very passionate in the way he communicates. Mm. And he's born to be a professor. Mm. You know, he said to me the other day, you know what is so cool about the thought of lecturing, Mum? Is that you have got a bunch of people who have to sit there and listen to stuff that you're really passionate about.
That's so cool.
Captive audience.
Yeah. Sounds like his mum.
Yeah, that's right. So he loves to talk. Like he'll come to the kitchen and he'll say, did you guys realise realise, and the whole family knows. Okay, yeah, here we go. Buckle down.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the eldest one is studying HR. Like his dad, he's very calm, but he's very intuitive when it comes to people. He understands conflict. You know, I've overheard some hilarious conversations with him coaching his friends on how to influence their parents. and it's good stuff. You know, I heard him say to his girlfriend one day, look, the reality is your mum has fears, right? And if you just go and ask her if you can go and do that and you don't address those fears, she's going to say no. So what you have to do is say, mum, I understand that these risks are there and this is what I'm going to do to make sure they're not a problem.
Oh, how can you say no?
I know.
I mean,
God, that's amazing.
Mum, you're stuffed. Like, how are you going to say no?
So do you reckon he's doing that to you and you're not realising it?
Oh, no, I can see it and I love it. I'm so proud of it. I'm like, ooh, that's pressing the right button.
I get excited too when my son does that too back to me. Like, I love it.
I love the skills. Yeah. And look, this is a boy who was born wise. You know, I wrote about him in the Corporate Dojo. I remember one day I was having a bit of a meltdown, emotional moment, and he came to me and he literally put his hand on my knee and he was a tiny boy. He was 5 or 6 at the most. He said, Mummy, you can choose to be happy. Why are you choosing to be sad? Yeah. And it just blew my mind. Yeah. You know, it was one of those moments where I went, yeah, that's probably a hell of a lot more mature wise than I'm being right
now. Exactly, an emotional slap to mummy.
Yeah, it was great.
But in a gentle way.
In a loving, gentle, shift your attitude.
Exactly.
All right, so we've got another song here. I can see clearly now. We all know this one.
Love this. What does that mean to you? That, you know, it really is about reflecting on the points in our lives. The fog just really starts to settle. And, you know, I've been diagnosed with depression, anxiety at various points as a consequence of burnout.
Mm.
And most powerful learning experiences of my life. I'm actually really grateful for those experiences. But when the fog lifts and you can see clearly now, it's the best feeling.
Fantastic.
Love that.
I can see clearly now. And that's with Jimmy Cliff. You're on Your Story Counts. I'm just about trying to work out what I'm saying here. Your Story Counts, 98.7. And we're heading for a top of 16 degrees with showers. And in the studio we have Karen Gately.
That's it. Yeah. So, Karen, awesome story so far.
Thank you.
Again, from being in HR, I get a lot of what you've done and I love it because a lot of people who came from, you know, bottom up, by the time they got through the administration of it all, it had really changed their belief system on people. You know, a lot of people were very frustrated as an HR person because they're only dealing with the problem, as I hear them say, I only deal with the problem children. Because that's the culture, you know, of HR, isn't it? You know, they deal with the issues, put out the fires, make sure that, you know, the procedures, the legalities are all sorted. But what you've done is you've come in with a whole different perspective and that it's not really about paper pushing, it's about the people. You know?
Oh, entirely.
And, you know, if you start from the top and change the culture, you'll have less problem children.
Exactly.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
And found a wonderful opportunity, you know, to build an HR department and do it your way, which is pretty fabulous and now a very successful company. But then you decided to do it yourself. Is that right?
That's right. So, you know, as I was saying, I had a fantastic career at Vanguard, but just had this need to influence a broader group of people. You know, I just remember walking through the city streets of Melbourne one day and observing what I describe as these corporate carnage, you know, these lifeless souls just dredging through their work day, just surviving at best, let alone thriving. And that just struck me as a really sad reality on so many levels, for individuals, because obviously our work has such a profound influence on the quality of our life. So it's looking at all these really unhappy people and reflecting on what does that mean for their family when they go home and they really haven't enjoyed work? What does it mean for their employer? Who's, you know, paying them to get an outcome to happen. But the reality is people can be really talented. They can have knowledge. They can have skill and experience. But it's in the application where we extract the value. And, you know, the key driver of that is behavioural choice. So how people choose to behave determines whether or not their skills add value. So, you know, I observed this and what I recognised was the need to teach leaders and individuals more about how do we influence behavioural choice through the strength of our spirit. You know, how do we make sure we've got a really strong energy reserve that allows us to think, feel and ultimately behave successfully. So, you know, I can't honestly say I had that point of clarity when I started the business. I just knew there was a bigger world and a bigger bunch of people that we wanted to influence their success.
So you launched that 11 years ago, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so now, I mean, I know you're you know, you're on TV now and
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You've got a lot of social gigs and yeah. keynote speaker and yeah. things like that. It's obviously done very, very well.
Yeah, thank you. It's, you know, something that we recognised a number of years ago is that, you know, we have experiences, we have insights that we want to share and we need to create channels to get it out there. So, you know, we quite deliberately went down a path of sharing our insights initially through writing. So, as I've said, mm-hmm. I've got two books. The second one's the People Manager's Toolkit. And, you know, from that I've forged a number of writing gigs. So I write regularly for the CEO magazine and Huffington Post and, you know, well, I could name loads because there are lots of...
Yeah, The Age, I think. The Herald, there was...
Financial Review.
Yeah.
You know, these are all publications that recognise that the world of business needs more insight and guidance around the human equation.
Yeah.
That, you know, and also I think there's a lot of complex management theory that the average manager just goes, I just don't know how to actually do the stuff. So the media work, the writing, you know, the time I spend on Today Extra is about getting to audiences to share insights to how they can thrive you know, at work and more broadly in life.
Yeah. And also corporations are getting more into the wellness and health area of the people too, aren't they?
And again, what I observe is the need, because absolutely they are, and there's a need to educate leaders as to precisely why that matters for the bottom line.
Yes.
You know, what is the commercial outcome?
Absenteeism.
Right. So in my experience, you know, a lot of organisations are recognising that people feeling happy and people feeling looked after is important. We now need to understand why is it important. And why it's important is because it builds a relationship between you and them that's based on trust and respect. If I as an individual feel that you actually care about my health as a starting point, we're entirely more likely to have a strong, trusting relationship. So, you know, there's lots of great initiatives going on out there. And as I say, it's about making sure that the board, the executive, the CEO truly understand this is not a nice to have. This is not us just doing nice things for people.
Not just flashy branding.
No, this is actually about influencing the strength and vitality of someone's mind, their body, their spirit, and then ultimately their ability to perform as an elite athlete would.
Yes.
And I think that's part of the karate background. It's like, well, what is the difference between being a black belt or not in your performance? And there's no doubt that you don't get to, you know, excel as an athlete if you're physically or mentally or spiritually drained.
And it gets that emotional buy-in.
Well, absolutely. You know, people feel that there's a care factor. And that's how you tap into discretionary effort when people actually want to do things.
And a sense of belonging. People actually want to belong to something.
Absolutely.
And why not get them to belong to where they're coming in every day?
That's right.
Because they spend a big chunk of time there.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. So growing up in the funds management world, it was very evident to me that we need to be able to articulate these things in ways that the intellectual leader can understand. You know, those of us who are heart-based and our thinking first and head second, get it.
You know? Yeah, I know.
That's us.
They're the ones to work with.
There's a whole bunch of people who are, you know, driven by their mind, and doesn't mean they don't have a heart.
No.
Of course it doesn't.
No. It's connecting it.
That's right. It's building that awareness, that connection between why does the so-called soft stuff matter? Why is it actually the hard stuff? And it's actually the stuff that is the difference between ordinary or just getting by business results and seriously great outcomes. So any organization you look at around the world who's been super awesome, you know, in terms of what they've been able to achieve, the human spirit is evident in those businesses.
I'm just fascinated with what's happening now with people taking work home and emails at home. Are you finding that speaking to these big businesses, how are they actually managing that now? Are they taking the work home and answering emails at 11:30 at night, or are they becoming more strict and saying, okay, when you sign off, that's it, you got the night to yourselves? How's it working?
Well, in my observation, it really depends on the CEO.
Okay, right.
You know, it really depends because there are some businesses who still value FaceTime.
Yeah.
They still value how many hours in the day did I see your dial and how quickly did you respond on email, and so that visibility of your connection with the business still matters, right? Other organisations who are more mature in their thinking will actually make it a performance issue if you don't create balance. You know, if you're working 12-hour days over extended periods of time, they'll start to ask the question, if this is not good for you and it's not good for the business, what is not working here? So some organisations organisations are recognising it as the, you know, a need to protect the well-being of the human beings in their business so that they can have a sustainable high standard of performance. Other businesses, you know, don't have the maturity to understand that, you know, just because someone's sitting there for a long time or, you know, to answer your question more directly, just because they're sitting online at home answering emails at 11 o'clock does not mean that's good.
No.
Does not mean that's productive.
Exactly. That's so true.
But it does come down to choice.
Yeah.
And it's something that I learnt, you know, when I did experience burnout and got to a really low point, it forced me to look at the behaviours that I was bringing to various situations, because there's the choices we make in each moment of every day that has the collective impact. And what I realised is, as an example, I'd have a whole bunch of CEOs who would, at the end of the day, start to wind up their day and they would start to think about people. And, you know, on their way home, they'd call me. Now, this might be 6, 6:30, 7, 7:30. And this became a routine. And so once you've got three or four CEOs ringing you every night, it's becoming a long work day.
Yeah.
And so there was a period in my business life where I felt that I had no choice. Yeah. I was reacting to the demands of my clients.
Mm.
And I woke up one day and realized that was crazy. All I had to do was not answer.
Mm.
And I stopped answering, and not one single CEO said to me, "Why aren't you available at 7:30 at night for me?"
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
They didn't have that expectation. Mm. It was an expectation I had of myself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So again, as individuals, whether we're leaders or professionals trying to build a career, you need to take charge of those impacts on your life, and you need to set boundaries of what you will or won't accept and what's reasonable to help you to maintain your own ability to thrive.
Fantastic. I guess one quick question before we play another song. Obviously a lot of your work, and like I said, you've been on Today Extra, and it is worth having a look at your web and watching the YouTube. It's very, very funny and wonderful. But what are some of the pieces of advice that you give when people aren't getting along because they are so different? I mean, the hard part is when someone's very, you know, in their head and someone's very in their heart, and they've got to work together and they're speaking two different languages. What's some of the strategies that you kind of put out there for people to deal with that situation?
I think one of the most important things is to recognise you can't actually control other people. You can't control how they think, how they feel, how they behave. Of course we can influence it by being the person that we are, but we can't control it. So, you know, it's not, I observe a lot of people spending a lot of time and energy focusing on what that other person should be doing and what they don't like, and we're in our heads having arguments with them that haven't even happened yet, you know,
we're
draining our energy. Well, yeah, right, well, I don't care, all this dialogue's going on. And the reality is that we can only control ourselves. So it does come down to, again, choose what you invest in. So what battles do you invest in? What arguments do you invest in or otherwise? So it starts with choosing your own attitude and looking for areas where you do have common interest and checking your attitude, you know, around judgment, for example.
Mm.
So, yeah.
There you go. That's the answer.
Yes.
Too easy. Hey,
absolutely.
We can all do that. Okay, so we've got a final song. If You Leave Me, Can I Come Too? Perfect in relation to what we were just talking about.
Yeah, I love this song so much. Every time I hear it, it reminds me of, you know what, we're a partnership. We're in this together. And so if you go, I'm coming too.
Yeah.
You know, it's how I feel about my husband. If we have a moment where you want to leave, well, too bad, too sad, I'm coming.
I'm following.
And I also feel very much that way about my team, you know, Ryan Gately. It's like, don't leave me. Like, it's like the firm, you know, you can join, but you can't go.
Can't go. No. Got it. Here we go.
If You Leave Me, Can I Come Too? Mental as anything. You're on 98.7. Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone, heading for a top of 16 degrees with showers. And in the studio, we have Karen Gately.
Yeah, Karen, we've been learning about the fact that you opened your business 11 years ago, where you've been a massive advocate for the workforce and really getting hold of those CEOs and you know, and the board, and saying, let's get real here. You know, looking after people isn't just a branding exercise. You know, it's something that you really have to commit to. And you get a lot of benefit from that, because people obviously feel a deeper connection, you know, and a stronger bond with the organisation.
Better productivity.
And high level productivity. But I think they also just feel safer.
Well, that's
you know, emotionally.
That's yeah. right.
They just feel like they want to go to work and that they're being supported and they're real. They're
feeling
people.
Valued.
Mm. Mm. That's it.
Well, that's right. And, I'm a passionate campaigner around mental health in the workplace and leaders understanding both the opportunity and the obligation they have to make sure that we're creating workplace environments that are healthy as a starting point. Mm. You know, that's just the foundation. That people feel safe, and from there we can then start to build a culture around excellence and high achievement. Mm. But if as a starting point people don't feel safe to come to work, if they feel intimidated or bullied or, you know, whatever, the harassed, discriminated against, then the chances of them thriving are buckley's and none.
Because I know I get a lot of clients coming in, you know, on this, you know, stress leave. And it's, you know, you say, oh, well, it's good that at least we have some sort of support. They can get a, you know, doctor's certificate to say that they're struggling. But the reality of that is it's very difficult to come back. Mm. You've lost a bit of your mojo, your confidence.
It's awful.
In yourself and in your career. You know, it's when we don't just work for, a lot of us don't work just for money. We work for a sense of purpose.
That's right.
When that's taken away. It's really tough, isn't it, to find that strength again?
Yeah, absolutely it is. And in the workplace, there's such an opportunity for leaders to recognise that, to influence it, but for peers also, you know, to actually care about our mates at work and to ask them if they're okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Heard a fantastic, sad but fantastic story recently where, you know, a young guy had decided he was going to end his life before work and he had the rope around his neck, the whole bit. For whatever reason, decided no, he wasn't going to do it now, and he went to work. And thankfully his colleagues saw it all over him and they asked him if he was okay and he said yes. So they asked again and he said yes. And then they grabbed a hold of him physically and said, no, are you okay? And he said, well, actually, no, this is what I was about to do.
Wow.
And his boss spent 5 hours sitting outside with him just talking about life. Now, that, you know, is an individual whose life was unquestionably saved by the influence of his workplace.
Yeah,
fantastic.
But the trust, the loyalty, the deep emotional ownership that the rest of the workforce consequently has for that organisation is incredibly high because they saw at their darkest moment their employer do the right thing. And now they are invested in that business.
See, that gives us all hope, don't you think?
Well, yeah. Well, I reckon it'll be pretty good working for Ryan Gately, don't you, Nanette?
What's it like working in your organisation?
Yeah. It can be a little
It'll be so much fun.
I know. Hey, you'd be so
karate
supported.
Chops, there'd be music.
Yeah, it actually depends on how focused you want to be some days, actually.
Yeah, that's right. You actually want to get something done.
Some days my team are like, could you work from home maybe?
I want to have some fun.
I do bring a lot of energy. I bring a lot of passion and a lot of drive. But I can also, you know, send the team off on multiple directions and undermine our ability to get stuff done because I've got 20,000 ideas. So I'm definitely the ideas person. I'm the connector. I'm the communicator.
The visual.
Yeah. And I have a really strong team that makes sure that we actually ground some of these ideas and put the structure around it and get it done.
And what are some of the services you offer?
So we, you know, started off life as an outsourced HR department basically. Yep. So we still do that. We still provide that opportunity for employers to have access to experienced HR advice on call as they need it. But really in recent years our passion has become, you know, to help organisations go from either, you know, failing but often surviving to thriving. Yeah. And usually we're engaged by the board or the CEO or the HR director. And typically those engagements go for a number of years. We're on a journey with these organisations. And a big part of our focus is coaching the CEO, supporting the executive team to thrive as a team.
Yeah.
Because as I say, it all starts from the top.
Absolutely it does. Mm-hmm. And how can people find out about you and what you're up to?
Well, as we've been saying, there's a lot of information out there in the world, you know, in terms of my writing. So obviously our website at ryangately.com.au is the best spot. Mm. Or just Google articles with my name and you'll find lots of information.
Well, you've been amazing. And we're going to tune into Today Extra because it's hilarious. Well, thank you so much, Karen. It's been awesome.
Thank you.
And we'd love to get you back on another time.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you.